You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
So, the governor of Tennessee, Bill Lee, signed that state's anti-drag bill into law last week. Is now a crime punishable by up to 6 years in prison for repeat offenses to do drag anywhere a child might see you in Tennessee, even in Nashville, where every day children can watch entire bachelorette parties puke off the backs of party tractors rolling up and down city streets. This new law could also make it illegal for a trans person to leave the house dressed in their own clothing. The law is ambiguous in how to enforce the law, whether raid drag bars to make sure everyone in them is over 21, or harass trans people seen in public, or to do spot genital checks on, I guess, everybody to make sure some passing trans person didn't slip out of the house undetected. That's going to be left up to local police departments in Tennessee, which all but guarantees that the law will be used to harass trans people in public and drag performers in clubs. This bill, as I pointed out at the top of last week's show, this clearly unconstitutional law was signed by Bill Lee, who also just signed a monstrous law criminalizing gender-affirming care for minors. And Bill Lee once appeared in drag in public at a school, and boy, oh boy, girl, oh girl, Governor Lee, she does not like being asked about what she done did in 1977.
At a press event, the governor was confronted with that photo, and he called any comparison between the drag show bill and a yearbook snapshot ridiculous.
What a ridiculous, ridiculous question that is. Conflating something like that to sexualized entertainment in front of children, which is a very serious subject.
Okay, it's all harmless hijinks when they do it. Remember when Rudy Giuliani dressed in drag and Donald Trump, for laughs, pretended to sexually assault him? Hijinks when they do it badly. Sexualized performance when actual drag queens do it better. If you've seen the photo of Governor Lee in drag, and you must have by now, but we will include the link again in the show notes this week, Lee's skirt does not exactly come down to his ankles. It's not something you'd see in a high school production of Arsenic and Old Lace. He's in a mini skirt. Now, I wouldn't say nice thighs to a high school student, but I will say nice thighs to a middle-aged man about his thighs back in high school. So, Governor Lee, body queen, nice thighs. You were a senior in high school when this photo was taken. So, still in high school, but legally an adult, working that skirt, flashing those thighs, nearly exposing that crotch in front of children, minors, which is now, thanks to you, a crime in Tennessee. Meanwhile, over in Texas, rabidly heterosexual Texas State Rep Nate Schatzlein, author of anti-drag and anti-trans bills, and possessor of what's known as gay face, was exposed as a Bill Lee-esque hypocrite when a videotape of him cavorting in a public park in drag with children present began to circulate on the internet. Let's listen to Texas State Representative Nate Schatzlein complain about his drag performance surfacing on the internet.
Look, the left wing is attacking me because of some class project I did as a teenager where my buddies dared me to wear a dress, but we're not going to let that distract us from the real message of what we're trying to get done right here in the Texas legislature, and that is ban sexually explicit drag shows.
Okay, for everybody keeping track at home, it's fine for men to wear dresses in public, in front of children, if it's for a class project, and so long as their buddies dared them to. I took a look at Representative Schatzlein's proposed legislation, and there's no my buddies dared me to exemption for doing drag. And excuse me, but boys in dresses as a class project? What was the name of that school? Because if a school was assigning projects like that right now to high school boys run through a park in drag, Fox News and anti-trans genocidal maniacs at CPAC would be calling in bomb threats right now. But maybe there's a workaround for the law here. If it's okay to do it, if your buddies dared you to, like the drag queens, trans women, and cross-dressers who pinned little pieces of paper with "I'm a boy" written on them to their outfits to get around female impersonation bans decades ago, drag queens could just start wearing "My Buddies Dared Me" pins on their gowns. And circling back to that gay face comment, I don't know if Representative Schatz's line is a tormented, conflicted closet case. I'm not going to say Representative Schatzline is setting my gaydar off because my gaydar readings are classified. But if he's not setting your gaydar off, you're either not gay, and so don't have gaydar, or you are gay and you need to power down and restart your gaydar. Man, oh man, these anti-drag Republican politicians getting caught in drag, it's taken me back to the 1990s when the GOP was pushing new anti-gay laws onto the books and trying to prevent the repeal of anti-gay laws already on the books. And there was a time when it didn't feel like a week would go by without some rabidly anti-gay Republican bigot getting busted for soliciting sex in a men's room in an airport, or getting caught having his luggage lifted by a rent boy in Europe, or getting outed by the muscle jock male sex worker whose dick he'd been choking on. Those were the Larry Craig, George Reekers, and Ted Haggard scandals, respectively. And now, it feels like we're going to find out every last Republican politician pushing anti-drag and anti-trans legislation was caught on camera at some point, at least once in their lives, in drag somewhere that could be seen by children. Won't somebody think of the children? My God, the children. Zooming out for a second, I have to ask, how is this going to work exactly? Are there going to be cops at pride events rounding up drag queens in June, arresting people carrying trans pride flags when there are tens of thousands of LGBTQ people in the streets? As more political queers are always reminding less political queers when June rolls around, the first pride, Stonewall, was a riot. Looks like come June, we may have to remind Republican elected officials that pride can be peaceful, it can look like a sparkly party, or pride can return to its roots, fighting back, defending ourselves, rioting. It's in pride's DNA, and it is not a recessive gene. All right, coming up on the Micro Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum Savage Lovecast, Dr. Evan Goldstein returns to the show. He's the founder of Bespoke Surgical, a first-of-its-kind health practice specializing in gay men's sexual health and wellness. He's here to talk numbing creams, the best lubes for anal sex for men and women, and whether spit is one of them, and more. And a quick note, Hump 2023 screenings continue in Seattle and on the boards through March 11th. Vancouver, Long Beach, Denver. Hump will be in you soon, and then Hump goes on to 30 more cities. To find out when the best porn festival in the world is coming to a city near you, and to find out about your streaming options, go to humpfilmfest.com. All right, on to your questions. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Foria. Foria crafts 100% all-natural sexual wellness products so you can experience deeper intimacy and transcendent moments of sexual pleasure solo or with your partner or partners. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/savage. That's foriawellness.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get up to 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Go to helixsleep.com/savage.
Mid-30s cis woman here, calling with a slightly embarrassing question about sleep masturbating. I noticed in the past several years that I am touching myself in my sleep during dreams to the point of climax, and that isn't too big of a concern, except that I worry about it happening while I am sharing space with others, perhaps on a trip or, God forbid, sharing a home or room with a family member, and I am unsure what to do. I am single, I live alone at the moment, and I'm not so much worried about it happening near a partner, but I am just wondering if you have any thoughts, suggestions, or if any of your listeners or medical advice professionals have any other ideas. I am generally quite a sex-positive person, and am just a bit baffled by this, mostly, as I said, just because of the potential embarrassment.
Turning to someone and saying, look, I have very vivid sex dreams in the middle of the night, and sometimes I sleepwank, seems to me like a really great way to make sure that you don't have to share a bed with anyone if you're sharing a hotel room with a couple of people, and that you might get a room to yourself if everyone's rented a great big Airbnb for the weekend. Just be honest, just be direct, tell people the truth. Look, sometimes I wank in my sleep in the middle of the night, or so I've been told by people who are in the same room with me in the middle of the night. It's an awkward thing to say, but it's a much more awkward thing you can continue to say to them to be blindsided by. So I'm telling you. And then, yeah, then you'll get the berth or the bunk or the room or the bed to yourself. Kind of a superpower, kind of a great big Yahtzee if you refuse to be ashamed of this thing that you're doing that you don't need to be ashamed of because you aren't doing anything wrong and you're not doing anything intentionally to make other people uncomfortable. It's just that in your sleep, you might unintentionally do something that could make someone else uncomfortable, which again is why you're going to get, if you're honest, the room or the bed or the berth or the bunk all to yourself. Hell, I don't do this. I don't jack off in my sleep in the middle of the night, but I'm tempted to tell people that I do so that I can get the room or the bunk or the bed or the berth all to myself too.
Hi, Dan and the rest of the Lovecast. 2 years ago, I became really good friends with my neighbor. My husband and I were expecting when we moved into our apartment, and she's such a great person. We instantly took in liking to her. Well, last year, when our son was 8 months old, I found out my husband was using drugs, so I kicked him out. Afterwards, I fell into a depression, and if it wasn't for her being such an amazing friend, I don't know what I would have done without her. If not for her dragging me, my sorry ass out to get fresh air or helping with the baby, I mean, she's been my rock. She knows this, and I don't know what I would have done without her. I don't have any family in the United States, and without her, I might have been completely alone. So about my friend, let's call her Hallie. She looks like Halle Berry, like a young Halle Berry. She's openly bisexual. She comes from a large family. She has great parents, and she's always so self-assured. Well, lately, after being single for 6 months, I've started dating. She knew ahead of time that our routine of her and I hanging out after she got off work and after the baby is asleep, you know, she knew that routine was going to change. My ex has our son a couple of nights a week, and I've been wanting to, just desiring to use that free time to do, you know, what I want or who I want. Hallie has been getting upset every time I tell her that I have a date. She takes it personally. She told me recently after getting pissy and storming out of the house, my house, that she doesn't invest in her friendships like she does with me and that I won't understand her feelings because I'm straight. Whenever she says things like that, the next day she acts like nothing happened and that everything is fine. Well, tonight she acted the same way again. I didn't even have a date. A guy that I'm seeing called and I answered while she's sitting on the couch watching TV with me. And she got up and left. Then I got a barrage of texts from her accusing me of only spending time with her out of boredom and that I only benefit from our friendship, but she gets nothing. By the way, I'm a mechanic. I've done hundreds of dollars of car work on her car for free. Anyway, she's accusing me of sleeping with anybody I spend time with that's not her. And my question is, how do I convince her that boundaries will make our friendship much stronger, or are her feelings just too strong for her to compromise? I really want to save our friendship, but if she can't respect what I do in my spare time, I can't be friends with her anymore.
You don't have to convince this person. You don't have to convince Hallie. Let's use the name that you're using for this person. You don't have to convince them to accept a boundary. You have to set a boundary. You say that Hallie is bisexual. It's clear from the way Hallie is behaving. Not that, I'm not going to say she had an ulterior motive all along, but maybe at some point she caught feelings for you. And watching you date is hitting her in the heart. It's kicking her in the feels. And it's hard for her. But you're going to have to be clear and firm. You are a straight woman. You do not have romantic feelings for her. And it's a little discomforting that she's treating you in such a way that makes you feel as if you've betrayed her romantically by looking around for a new partner. Maybe, and I would say this was a coincidence, I don't think this is Hallie's intent, maybe just 6 months after getting out of a relationship with your ex who had a drug and alcohol problem while you still have a very young child, maybe part of what Hallie is picking up on is that it might be too soon, or she's worried about you and she's expressing it in all sorts of shitty, incorrect ways. Maybe there are some wires getting crossed here. But I think the more obvious explanation is probably the correct explanation. Again, not that Hallie was motivated by a desire or was waging some long campaign, a long war to get into your pants, but she's been taking care of you. You three have been functioning as basically a kind of family unit, and feelings crept in where perhaps she didn't intend them to or didn't expect them to, but now she has to sit with them and she's feeling a little jealous. Acknowledge, just put it all out on the table. Like, this is what I think is going on here. This is what we have to be clear about if we are going to remain good friends and good neighbors, and emphasize that you really appreciate everything that she's done for you and how important she's been to you and your kid, while also reminding her that you've done for her too, and you want to be in the kind of relationship with her going forward as friends and intimates, but not romantic intimates, where you can really be there for each other in profound ways without interfering with each other or blocking each other, cock-blocking, in Hallie's case, cock-blocking you, from pursuing other romantic relationships. You would expect Hallie, as your friend, to be happy for you if you were to meet somebody else who was good and kind and decent, somebody you would also be bringing in to Hallie's life if you guys are still neighbors and really close. And you promise in advance that when Hallie meets somebody like that, when Hallie begins to date, you're not going to be jealous of the time that that person will take, that Hallie's been spending with you, that that person will take away from you. And if Hallie can't be loving and supportive of you in that way, if she can't recognize the boundary that you've set, she can't honor the boundary that you've set, the boundary that you need to articulate and set immediately, well, then maybe this relationship has run its course. And maybe Hallie had an ulterior motive all along, was interested in you in a way that you were not interested in her all along, and Hallie's going to have to sulk off with her hurt feelings and her broken heart and get over you. And then maybe you can circle back and be friends. But yeah, if she had an ulterior motive all along, probably can't circle back, probably can't be friends, probably can't come back from that. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Foria, makers of products for amazing sex, the kind of sex you want to have. Products including arousal oil, clean lube, bath salts, and suppositories. People are literally saying things like this about Foria's products. This is a quote: "I had a 3-minute orgasm and then a 5-minute orgasm and felt like I was surfing in a perpetual wave pool of pleasure." And another quote: "We use Awaken, and when she gets on top, we both come so hard that we see sounds and hear colors." And it doesn't hurt when GQ calls you the best sex product of the year, and Shape says you are the best invention since the vibrator. Now, this is a little personal, but Terry and I tried the suppository, and leave it to Foria to make suppositories sexy. They did it. I'm not sure what they put in there. I know there's CBD at least, but they have some serious love potion energy. So yeah, you have my permission to try this. I fully endorse you to go ahead and treat yourself to more, deeper, fuller pleasure wherever you can find it as often as possible. And you can start with a bottle of Foria. Foria is offering a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/savage or use the code SAVAGE at checkout. That's foriawellness.com/savage for 20% off your first order. I recommend trying their Awaken Arousal Oil and Sex Oil. You'll thank me later.
Hi, Dan. Mid-30s female here. I'm calling with a question about my sister. She just ended a monogamish relationship where she was allowed to have other online relationships, provided the person was out of state and they never met. Now that she has dumped her boyfriend, she quite understandably wants to go meet these people. However, when my sister says that a man she's only ever met online is flying her to Texas for a week to his remote cattle ranch for unattached BDSM sex, I feel like we're back in high school and I'm yelling at her that her cell phone is not a magical shield that will keep her safe in dangerous situations. Right now, my plan is to put an AirTag in her luggage and make her text in with security questions daily, as in, what was our childhood dog name? Am I overreacting? And what can I do to help keep her safe? Because while I want her to have a great experience, I also don't want to be filing a missing persons report.
People have flown to other states to have insane sexual adventures with people that they don't know, have never met before, had a great time, and come home alive. And people have done everything, quote unquote, right. Met somebody through work, met somebody through Hinge or OkCupid or Farmers Mingle, had a nice opposite sex vanilla heterosexual relationship and wound up dead at the hands of the partner, the appropriate partner, the partner that their families and friends approved of sometime later. So I don't want to be alarmist. A lot of people have had crazy bungee jump, kinky experiences that in some cases just became wonderful memories, and other cases led to lifelong romantic, sexual, or just friendly connections and were peak sexual experiences that they treasure. Yeah, and other people have married the nice guy next door and wound up dead at the hands of the nice guy next door. That said, we can't be Pollyanna about this. We have to be realistic about the risks here. And if your sister is running off to meet somebody on a remote ranch and doesn't know his name, can't give you the guy's address, doesn't have, I don't know, a copy of the guy's ID, can't tell you as her safety person where she's going and who she's going to be with and when she'll check in and when she'll be back, it's a lot easier for that person to murder her and get away with it than it would be for her husband or boyfriend to murder her and get away with it. So this guy who is flying your sister out to his remote ranch, is he willing to share his name, his information? Does he welcome the kind of scrutiny that someone who wants to have this kind of banana sexual experience with someone they've never met before should welcome? Welcoming that kind of scrutiny, encouraging your sister to have a safety person who knows where she is and knows who she's with, is a way that he can telegraph to your sister that he's someone safe to have this kind of experience with. And if he won't share that information with your sister so that she can share it with you, her safety person, he's telling your sister that he's not the kind of person that she's safe or safer having this kind of crazy, fun, you only live once, YOLO, bungee jump, BDSM experience with. So if I was talking to your sister, if your sister called me and asked me for my advice, I would tell her name, address, ID, references. If this is not the first time this guy has done this sort of thing, and I don't think you want to go spend a week having a BDSM experience with someone who's never done this sort of thing before, in a much smaller way, taking baby steps, if he's not willing to share that information with her, she should not go. And you know what? If he's an experienced BDSM player, if she's not asking him for that information and he called me, I would encourage him not to have her come and stay, because what she would be telling me as a sub and a bottom is that she's reckless and perhaps not all there. And so not someone you want to have in your dungeon or on your remote ranch, even as a sub. So talk to your sister. This guy shares all of this information with her willingly, without hesitation, knowing that she's going to share it with you and that this information can be checked and verified. And maybe he provides a couple of references, other women that he's played with, that he's hosted on his crazy S&M ranch who had a good experience and are willing to vouch for him, or she doesn't go. And if she goes anyway, go ahead and slip one of those Apple geotag thingamajobs into her luggage. It would be nice to see one of those stalker fobs used for something helpful and positive, as opposed to the way a lot of those stalker fobs have been used thus far.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. My band uses Squarespace, and we're just so happy about it. Here are just a few of the features Squarespace offers and that we enjoy. Email campaigns. Collect email subscribers and convert them into loyal fans. Start with an email template and customize it by applying your brand ingredients like site colors and logo. We just did this. If your org collects donations, you can support your cause by gathering contributions with PayPal, Apple Pay, Stripe, and Venmo. Analytics. Gain powerful insights into who's visiting your website and how they're interacting with your content with their in-depth website analytics tools, including page views, traffic sources, time on site, most read content, audience geography, and more. This stuff is good to know. You can share videos, connect to social media, sell stuff. It goes on and on. There is so much more on offer at Squarespace. If you want your website to work well and look beautiful, Squarespace has you covered. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
I had a question. I had been married for 20 years. The both of us are bisexual, and we have been best friends with each other for this entire time. We now have 3 children. While we were dating, had been attacked and raped at that point in time. And then about 10 years into our marriage, she had a breakdown, I believe was due to the rape incident. But we had to separate for a brief period of time because she became dangerous to herself and became suicidal. We ended up getting back together after she was diagnosed as being bipolar. Now 10 years later, to the 20-year mark, we've not been intimate for the last 5 or 6 years because she has no desire to have any intimacy with me at all. And we've had a friends with benefits relationship set up for myself, and she doesn't want to have sex. It was her idea. Recently, we opened it up to an open marriage and open dating, and I still haven't seen anybody yet, but she has already started dating another female and now wants her to move in with us and me to move into that person's house. We have an all-girls house and one boy's house. Just trying to get some ideas on what I should do, because some of this doesn't feel right to me. She's my best friend, but I feel she's rushing too fast into what she's working on right now.
I think you should get a lawyer. Your wife dating another woman, wanting that woman to move in to your house, wanting that woman to move in and for you to move out and for there to be some all boys house, that's kind of unreasonable as a request goes. And it demonstrates a disregard for your autonomy, your equality, that seems to rise to the level of irreconcilable difference. Sounds to me like, at least so far as your wife is concerned, that your marriage is over, not just the sexual dimension of your marriage, perhaps due to your wife's experience with sexual violence, your wife having been raped, but the emotional connection now as well. It sounds like your wife is done, and that your wife may be easing you out of the house and so motivated, perhaps because of this new person in her life that she does connect with sexually. And as soon as you're out of the house and there's been a decent interval, your wife's lawyer will appear and she will file. It just sounds like the marriage is over. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and I'm making an enormous assumption here. Maybe your wife wants a companionate marriage, but not so companionate that you live together anymore. A companionate, but having your own homes marriage. But that is something that your wife, if she wants that, needs to negotiate with you about to make sure that that's acceptable to you, even if it's not something you ever thought of, even if it's something you're having a hard time wrapping your head around now. Maybe you could get to a point where that would work for you too. You could find a friend with benefits more easily if you had your own place and remain married to your wife, but maintain separate residences. sure, maybe that's a thing that you could do down the road if your wife was willing to negotiate with you about that, as opposed to issuing some sort of bizarre ultimatum and imposing that on you and not having the either emotional intelligence to realize that that's an enormous ask on her part and likely to be not a well-received ask. And that's the charitable read. Either she doesn't have the emotional IQ to see how hard it is, what she's asking you to do is, how hard that is, or she doesn't care. She knows that it's a huge ask. She knows that it's an unfair imposition. She knows that it's something that if you were going to do, you're going to have to do together, come to an understanding about, work toward that, negotiate your way toward that. And she doesn't just fucking care. She doesn't care because she wants out. And this is how she's going to ease you out. Your sex life with your wife is over. And it sounds to me like your marriage is over. I'm sorry. It sounds to me like your marriage is over. She eased you out of your sex life, perhaps perfectly legitimate, understandable reasons. Now she's easing you out of the house. It's hard to imagine that once you're out of the house, once there's a girl's house and a boy's house, that she's not going to, it's never easing out when divorce papers are filed. She's going to show you out of your marriage. Seems to me a lot of chaos is coming. If your wife just started dating somebody else and wants that person to move in, and you should talk to a lawyer in advance of the chaos really kicking off so that you're prepared emotionally, maybe talk to a counselor too, but also legally.
When me and mine conk out, we do so very happily on our Helix sleep mattress. You can't have my husband or his boyfriend or my boyfriend. Well, not for keeps, but you can have and should get our mattress. Helix Sleep is a premium mattress brand that provides tailored mattresses based on your unique sleep preferences. The Helix lineup offers 14 unique mattresses, including a collection of luxury models, a mattress for big and tall sleepers, even a mattress made just for kids. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? Take the Helix Sleep quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. We got the Midnight Lux model. Actually, we got two of them because we wanted medium firmness. And we tend to thrash around a little bit in our sleep at night. And sometimes we do a little bit of thrashing before we go to sleep. It was such an improvement, the Helix mattress, over our old mattress. Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night risk-free trial. You can try out your new Helix mattress, see how your body adjusts, and if you decide it's not the best fit, you're welcome to return it for a full refund. Plus, Helix mattresses are American-made and come with a 10 to 15-year warranty, depending on the model. And remember, you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. Helix is offering up to 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for my listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/savage. This is their best offer yet. It won't last long. Go and get it. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Hi, Dan. This is a 38-year-old woman calling from the Bay Area, and I have something to run by you. I just started dating a wonderful person maybe just a few months ago, and he has a best friend who is very tall and very blonde and very attractive, kind of the opposite of me, and her appearance, I suppose, isn't the problem. The issue is, and my question is, she is very needy. She's very high maintenance. And she comes out a lot when he and I go out together. And they spend a lot of time together, you know, just going out socially. And right now, I am sitting in my car waiting for my date and waiting for my boyfriend. And he is at her house. They were out all afternoon. He is drunk, so he is not able to drive to meet me for our date, but instead finding his way here in a safer way. My question is this. Do I need to talk to him about this relationship with his friend? Is this a thing? Is this an issue? Is there a boundary that needs to be set? It just seems like oftentimes his and my time together is impacted by
his friend. And I don't want to be a babysitter, and I'm not really thrilled that he is now showing up for our date drunk.
Oh my God, have some self-respect. Drive the fuck away. Let him get his drunk ass an Uber when he's ready to go home. Look, it's fine for people to have friends. I think people should be able to have friends of the opposite sex. I think straight men should be able to have straight women who are their friends, or bi women who are their friends. Plenty of gay men I know have other gay men who are their friends. But there's the kind of, you know, you say this woman is high maintenance. There's the kind of maintenance a boyfriend does, and then there's the kind of maintenance a friend does. And it sounds from how you describe this relationship that you're, that this guy, not even your boyfriend, you've been seeing him for a couple of months, that he does the kind of maintenance, spends the kind of time with her that a boyfriend might. And I can only assume that that's because part of him is hoping that at some point she will want him to be her boyfriend. But he wants a backup, and he wants a patsy, apparently. He'll sit in a car outside this woman's apartment while he is shit-faced and wait to pick him up, to drive him to a date with you, caller. Go on a date with you, where he's drunk because he's been hanging out all day with this other woman, the original woman, the woman I think he wants or might hope to be with at some point, and there you are, waiting to chauffeur him around? No, no, no. Have some self-respect. Drive the fuck home. Let him figure, I wouldn't even tell him. I wouldn't even text him to say I was leaving. I would just go, and then let him and his drunk ass figure it out. He's a grown-up. He can get himself a goddamned Uber, and he can get himself some other backup bitch. It's not going to be you. Look, you're a grown-ass woman. You're 38 years old. You've only been dating this guy for a couple of months. Even if there was no other high-maintenance friend who was showing up all the time when you two were on a date, the fact that he's too drunk to come to the car, the fact that he got shit-faced before you two were supposed to go on a date, that on its face, this far in, just a couple of months in, disqualifying. Start the car, drive the fuck home, get the fuck out of there, go find somebody else, somebody who doesn't have baggage in the form of some hot blonde friend who gets him drunk before he's supposed to go on a date with another woman. What kind of friend does that to somebody? Or shows up when he's on a date? Yeah, get the fuck out of there. Salvage your self-respect. Take it home. Leave. Go, go, go. Now, now, now. Start the car. If I was sitting next to you in that car, which would be weird if you were about to go on a date and you had a sex advice columnist with you in the car, but just as weird that he's bringing this woman along on your dates. If I was there with you in the car, I would start the car myself. I would drive you the fuck home, even though I don't know how to drive myself.
Hi, Dan, 30-year-old cis guy from the Pacific Northwest here. I have a question for you about my partner that I've been with for 2 years. We've been open the whole time, and she has at the moment like one other partner, and she gave me, I'll say this, reason to believe that she had been dishonest. So I sat her down and implored her for some honesty and asked her about all of our kind of agreements that we have, one of which, and maybe the most important of which, is to use condoms with other people because we do not use condoms. I found out that she had been having sex. She says she had sex only once, not using a condom, since she met this person, but I don't know if that's true. It could be more than once, but she at least admitted to doing it once, and that was months ago at this point, and she never told me about it until, you know, I sat her down and asked her very seriously about a bunch of aspects of our relationship. That's not actually the only boundary that she did not adhere to, but it's the one that I'm the most concerned with. It's the one that kind of freaks me out. So I'm just wondering, like, how would you proceed? Is that like a just get him out of there kind of situation? Or, yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to feel trusting of her, and I don't know what reasonable requests I can make. Like, I don't really trust her to see this guy, but I don't want to become monogamous. I don't want to say demand monogamy from her, but then say I don't need to be monogamous because I have kept up with things. But I also don't trust her with people. You know, maybe there's some way I can repair that. But yeah, I'd love any advice.
Promising to use condoms with other partners, outside sex partners, and then having unprotected sex with other people, that's a pretty significant violation. Most people are going to look at that. I'm going to look at that and say that certainly would seem to rise to the DTMFA level, dump the motherfucker already level, especially when it came coupled with, packaged with, bundled with other violations of your trust that you don't enumerate. That's very concerning. And part of me wants to say, yeah, absolutely, non-negotiable, end the relationship. You can't get past that kind of violation of trust. And yet, on the other hand, I know people personally, and I've advised people who experience the exact same kind of trust violation. Somebody not using condoms when they had promised to use condoms with outside sex partners, and then putting their primary partner, the person they promised that they would use condoms with other people, at risk. And yet I know people who've gotten past that. I know people who experienced the violation of trust that you've experienced and were able to come back from that, work their way back from that, speak to a couples counselor together about that, and reestablish trust. So, yeah, I find myself torn. On the one hand, I want to say, absolutely, this is DTMFA. On the other hand, I want to say, well, that's not an absolute, because I know people who got past this and are happy they got past this. And again, reestablish trust. So I would turn it around and ask you, do you think you could possibly trust this woman again after what she did? And I promise you, it was more than once. She fucked somebody else without a condom. You pressed her on it. She admitted to doing it just once. It was more than once. She's been flooded with other, that guy's come, other, it happened, not maybe not with other people, but in my experience, from the many people that I've talked to over the years who've gone through this, one condom dropped on the floor before the unprotected sex, and another shoe is going to drop after that. You're going to find out that there was more. Maybe you'll find that out when you speak to a couples counselor. Is it worth it? You've only been dating this person for 2 years. You're not married to this person. You don't have kids. You haven't scrambled your DNA together with this person or adopted kids with this person. Is it worth it? Because to reestablish trust is going to require an enormous investment of emotional energy, time, and if you talk about it with a couples counselor, money. Couples counselors aren't cheap. So I guess I would ask you, is it worth it? Is she worth it? Is this relationship worth it? Are you willing to make that hydra-headed investment of time, energy, money to salvage, to save this relationship with this person who has demonstrated to you that they will lie to your face, violate your trust like she did, behave impulsively in a moment where she was carried away sexually, perhaps, knew she was betraying you, felt terrible and conflicted about it, is glad everything is out in the open, and this is a charitable read I'm giving this whole situation, and wants to work her way back into your good graces, wants to re-earn your trust. Do you get a sense that that's how it went down, or she went down, and that's how she feels about it? Or was her not using condoms with other people just her slamming her hand down on the self-destruct button, hitting the eject button, wanting out of this relationship, acting out in such a way that she would eventually get chucked out of this relationship? Because it's not just you who has to want to reinvest time, energy, money in saving this relationship. You need to know whether she's willing to make those investments and make them sincerely. Sometimes people will go through the motions of making that investment of time, money, and energy in saving a relationship because they feel like they owe it to their partner to do those things, even though they know they want out. They have to have the decency to pretend they don't, I guess, to draw it out, to work, to try to save the relationship, to do at least that. Sometimes people make those investments entirely disingenuously. You're going to have to use your best judgment there about whether she's being disingenuous if she wants to or tells you she wants to
try to save this relationship. But first, I would ask you, do you want to save this relationship? Or did you call because you wanted somebody to give you permission for this reason to end this relationship? I'll give you that permission. Yeah, absolutely. This is a perfectly legitimate reason to end this relationship. That said, I know people, I've advised people, I've talked with people in the past who went through exactly what you're going through now, did the work, saved the relationship, and are glad they did. All right, before we get to this week's listener response calls, let's check the comments on last week's show at savage.love. Says Ted the Bellhop, the lady taking her friend to the swingers party should just ask him if he wants to fuck. One of the few advantages of being a woman is that you can be forward without being creepy or scary. Feel free to use it. That is true to an extent. I mean, as a gay man, wanna fuck is a legit pickup line. It is one that I have used, but it's not always a successful one. Some gay guys do find it creepy or off-putting. You always gotta read the room. But it's not a pickup line straight men should ever use on women, because men can say no to other men without fear, whereas women don't always feel safe saying no. And what can seem delightfully direct when one gay man says it to another, or a woman says it to a man, is likely to feel like a threat when a man says it to a woman. T. Rulala, pardon me if I'm butchering your name, T. Rulala says to the woman in Berlin seeking sex and connection, we have a space here in Berlin which is probably unique in the whole world. It's not a sex club. It's not a yoga or bondage space. It's something in between. They do workshops that allow you to explore yourself, your body, your sexuality, while also experiencing group dynamics. I went there once to a pegging workshop, and after 3 hours, we were about 20 people going at it as if girls pegging guys would be the most normal thing in the world. It was such a freeing experience. T. Rulala shared a link to the website, iksk-berlin.de, and added, we need more spaces like this in the world. We've got one, a little like it, here in Seattle, the Center for Sex Positive Culture, thecsps.org, but we do need more like it all around the world, please. Finally, says Mike, regarding the call with the gay man who wants an open relationship, Dan, I wish you had touched on how he'd mentioned that he's been taking care of his body and his husband has not, to which Minor Offense added, I think it's very important to take care of your health and general appearance while in a relationship, but I have known people who felt like it was okay to let yourself go once they were in a relationship. I did wonder if that caller's attraction had faded partially because of that, since mine would, but I'm not sure how to address that without being hurtful. Yeah, and I'm not sure how to address that without being accused of fat phobia, but for the record, I think basic maintenance, making an effort to take care of ourselves, is one way we demonstrate to our partners that we don't take them for granted. And basic maintenance is not an unreasonable thing to expect. Married people live longer because their spouses nudge them to go to the doctor when they need to. And I don't think it's monstrous to nudge someone to go to the gym or go for a walk. That said, over the years, bodies and priorities change, and we all have to roll with those changes in long-term relationships. Sometimes that can mean rolling into non-monogamy. Thanks to everyone who commented on the show last week at savage.love. I read all your comments. I love them. Keep them coming. And thanks for posting about the show to your own social media accounts. We really appreciate how you guys help spread the word about the Savage Lovecast. And now something else we really appreciate, listener response calls.
Hi, Dan. This is a comment in response to episode 853. Your guest, Magdalene Taylor, cited some evidence to show that women are slightly more likely to regret casual sex, and both you and Magdalene said it was because of slut shaming, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but I think you left out something really important. Women are more likely to report having had unsatisfying sex in casual hookups. In other words, women who have sex with men might be more likely to regret their casual hookup, not because they're afraid of being a slut, but because they usually don't come, and their partners can be really big assholes. They might experience coercive or otherwise poor behavior from their male partners. I don't speak for all women, but for me, I regret hookups a lot, and it's only because I often walk away with a yeast infection, and I didn't even get to come.
Good morning, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm listening to episode 853, where, Dan, you're giving the woman advice about her ex-boyfriend who doesn't want her to hang out with his friends after the breakup. I'm calling to ask about your use of the word trauma. I'm not calling as a critique, but really just to ask about how we use the word trauma and should we be mindful of how we use the word trauma. It seems like it gets used so much that it's being watered down so that when it is used appropriately, it doesn't carry the same weight that I think that it should. It sounds like from her call that it was a normal breakup and very challenging and very sad, but it doesn't seem like it rises to the level of trauma. So my question is, should we be saving how we use the word trauma? Should we be using other words, or is trauma the right word in this situation?
I wanted to offer an alternate take to your observation about the attacks on drag queens and trans people being a diversion away from predatory preachers and pastors. I don't think it's as much that they are consciously trying to divert our attention. I think what's really going on is that today more people personally know a gay person in their family, at work, in their friend circle, so they don't feel as comfortable attacking the gay community. They now have split off drag queens and trans people as an other group that they can attack without feeling that they're attacking gay people because they don't personally have experience with drag queens or trans people. So they have just taken the same rifle scope and shifted the aim slightly to the right past the LGB and aimed it at the TQ+. But it's all the same tactics and all of the same language that we've seen for decades.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's Lovecast or something to say about something I said on this week's Lovecast? You can go to savage.love/askdan to record your question or comment right on the website. Or you can use the voice memo app on your phone and email your question or your comment to q@savage.love. Or you can party like it's 1999 and leave us a message at 206-302-2064. To my listeners in Europe, we have heard your cries. Hump is finally coming to you. Go to humpfilmfest.com/Europe for tickets to Hump's upcoming screenings in Vienna, Brussels, Zurich, Berlin, and Munich. And if you've ever been Magnum curious, now is the perfect time to become one of my subs. I'm hosting two events this month at Savage.Love exclusively for Magnum subscribers to the Savage Lovecast. Next Thursday, March 16th, I'm hosting Savage Love Live, where I'll hang with Nancy and the tech-savvy at-risk youth on Zoom and answer questions live. Then, on Wednesday, March 22nd, I'll be hosting an AMA in the Savage Love comments. Go to savage.love/subscribe to become a Magnum sub right now for as little as $8. Follow me on Instagram and now on Spoutable. At least I think I signed up for Spoutable, at Dan Savage. And I'm on Post News and still on Twitter, at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Dr. Evan Goldstein on Instagram at Dr. Evan Goldstein. Learn more about his practice at bespokesurgical.com. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.